ओम ज्ञानच निरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. After one is liberated from the conditions of material existence, that is, when one is nivritta, as previously stated herein, or when one is freed from all material necessities, one becomes qualified to discharge the process of bhakti yoga. Therefore, bhakti yoga includes jnana yoga, or in other words, the process of pure devotional service simultaneously serves the purpose of jnana yoga. Liberation from material conditions is automatically achieved by the gradual development of pure devotional service. These effects of bhakti yoga are called anartha nivritti. Things which are artificially acquired gradually disappear along with the progress of bhakti yoga. Meditation on the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead, the first processional step, must show its effect by anartha nivritti. The grossest type of anartha, which binds the conditioned soul in material existence, is sex desire. And this sex desire gradually develops in the union of the male and female. When the male and female are united, the sex desire is further aggravated by the accumulation of buildings, children, friends, relatives, and wealth. When all these are acquired, the conditioned soul becomes overwhelmed by such entanglements, and the false sense of egoism, or the sense of myself and mine, becomes prominent, and the sex desire expands to various political, social, altruistic, philanthropic, and many other unwanted engagements, resembling the foam of the sea waves, which becomes very prominent at one time and at the next moment vanishes as quickly as a cloud in the sky. The conditioned soul is encircled by such products as well as products of sex desire, and therefore bhakti yoga leads to gradual evaporation of the sex desire, which is summarized in three headings, namely profit, adoration, and distinction. All conditioned souls are mad after these different forms of sex desire, and one shall see for himself how much he has been freed from such material hankerings based primarily on the sex desire. As a person feels his hunger satisfied after eating each morsel of foodstuff, he must similarly be able to see the degree to which he has been freed from sex desire. The sex desire is diminished along with its various forms by the process of bhakti yoga, because bhakti yoga automatically, by the grace of the Lord, effectively results in knowledge and renunciation, even if the devotee is not materially very well educated. Knowledge means knowing things as they are. And if by deliberation it is found that there are things which are at all unnecessary, naturally the person who has acquired knowledge leaves aside such unwanted things. When the conditioned soul finds by culture of knowledge that material necessities are unwanted things, he becomes detached from such unwanted things. This stage of knowledge is called vairagya, or detachment from unwanted things. We have previously discussed that the transcendentalist is required to be self-sufficient and should not beg from the rich blind persons to fulfill the bare necessities of life. Shukadeva Goswami has suggested some alternatives for the bare necessities of life, namely the problem of eating, sleeping, and shelter. But he has not suggested any alternative for sex satisfaction. One who has the sex desire still with him should not at all try to accept the renounced order of life. For one who has not attained to this stage, there is no question of a renounced order of life. So by the gradual process of devotional service under the guidance of a proper spiritual master and following the principles of the Bhagavatam, one must be able to at least control the gross sex desire before one accepts the renounced order of life factually. So purification means getting free gradually from sex desire, and this is attained by meditation on the person of the Lord as described herein, beginning from the feet. One should not try to go upwards artificially without seeing for himself how much he has been released from the sex desire. The smiling face of the Lord is the tenth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and there are many upstarts who at once try to begin with the tenth canto, and especially with the 5 chapters which delineate the Rasa-lila of the Lord. This is certainly improper. By such improper study or hearing of Bhagavatam, the material opportunists have played havoc by indulgence in sex life in the name of Bhagavatam. This vilification of Bhagavatam is rendered by the acts of the so-called devotees. Vilification, you know what that means? It means like blasphemy. Is rendered by the acts of the so-called devotees. One should be free from all kinds of sex desire before he tries to make a show of recital of Bhagavatam. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur clearly defines the import of purification as cessation from sex indulgence. He says, yatha yatha dhish, yatha yatha dhish cha shuddhyati, vishaya lam patyam tyajati, tata tata dharyad iti chitta shuddhi tara tamyenaiva dhyana tara tamyam uktam. Which Prabhupada hasn't given a translation. I guess the Sanskrit editor should have done. As much as one, consciousness is purified and one gives up sense gratification, especially sex life and illicit desires, illicit sex life, that much one's, according to that, there is a gradation of one's purification of consciousness. One's understanding one's understanding is thus measured, and one can engage in various levels of meditation. Prabhupada really did a wonderful job translating. It's so different. Sanskrit and Bengali is so different from English. Prabhupada put it in simple English. It's just the whole sentence structure and everything. The whole concepts are completely different for a start. And then the sentence structure is also completely different. I try to translate it, everything comes back to front. And as one gets freed from the intoxication of sex indulgence by purification of intelligence, one should step forward for the next meditation, or in other words, the progress of meditation on the different limbs of the transcendental body of the Lord should be enhanced in proportion to the progress of the purification of the heart. The conclusion is that those who are still entrapped by sex indulgence should never progress to meditation above the feet of the Lord. Therefore, recital of Srimad Bhagavatam by them should be restricted to the first and second cantos of the great literature. One must complete the purificatory process by assimilating the contents of the first 9 cantos. Then one should be admitted into the realm of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Here in the beginning of the second canto of Bhagavatam are described various processes of purification centered on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. First of all, in his impersonal feature, as conceived of within nature, the Virata Roop. In this chapter, conception of the Lord within the heart. Conception of him means that it's not an imaginary conception, but in the beginning, the meditator hears about the form of the Lord, which is described here, and then, almost as if imaginary, tries to see that form within his heart. The Lord is very beautiful, bluish form, holding the 4 objects, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma, conch shell, Sudarshan Chakra, the Komadaki Club, and the lotus. So it's the Lord's form is described, and a meditator, first of all, tries to picture that form within his heart, And then gradually as he becomes purified, he actually sees the form of the Lord as he is, because it's not simply an imaginary concept, but it is, factually the Lord is there. And in the next chapter after this, it will be described the direct process of bhakti yoga. It's also described at the beginning that there are processes of worship of various demigods, but that should be given up to concentrate simply on worshipping Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udara dhihi tivrena bhakti yoga na yajeta paramam purush yajeta purusham param. That whether one is full of desires, just like the worshippers of various demigods, or one is free from desires, like the pure devotees, those who are ready to be admitted to the path of pure devotion, or one is desiring moksha, generally those who meditate on the Lord in the heart, they do so, but with a desire to become liberated by doing so. This meditation on the Lord in the heart is usually not undertaken in a purely devotional manner. So however one desires, it is recommended that one should very strongly, in the process of bhakti yoga, worship the Supreme Lord, because that will give him the ultimate benediction. So this meditation on the form of the Lord is being described in this verse and within this chapter. And the beautiful form has been described, but it's interesting how Prabhupada, of course in other purports he describes, he elaborates in his purports in this section on the beautiful form of the Lord. But Prabhupada gives this quite a long purport. It's over 3 pages. No, sorry. 2.5 pages. So it's quite a long purport. But Prabhupada, he, rather than elaborating on the beautiful form of the Lord, he picks up on the point of how one cannot even begin to appreciate the beauty of the form of the Lord unless one is free from material desires, which are particularly represented as sexual desires. So it might seem that, well, Prabhupada's spoiling all the fun here. It's a description of the beautiful form of the Lord, and shouldn't we simply elaborate upon that, as so many great acharyas have done? Of course, great acharyas have also elaborated upon the condition of material existence, which is epitomized by sexual desires. Pungsastriya mittani bhavametam tayora ho tayor mito hridiyagranti mahuhu. Great personality, Rishabdev, who is himself the Supreme Personality of Godhead, says that this material existence is epitomized by the attraction between male and female. And when male and female unite in sex indulgence, then a hard knot of attachment is formed on the heart. And he uses the word ahu, ahu, they say. In other words, although he's the Supreme Lord, who himself is the authority on all matters, nevertheless, he quotes that it's not only me that's saying it, but great sages, they also say that. Of course, Rishabdev was taking the part of a king when he said this, a king instructing his sons. So he also quotes other persons. Krishna also quotes in Bhagavad Gita. He also refers to Vedanta Sutra. That it's not only me that's saying, but Others, they also say. He refers to Vedanta Sutra and to other rishis. That you see, I'm saying this, and this is also stated by the authorities. Rishi Bhe Bahuda Gitam, Chando Bhe Vivikai Kutak, Brahma Sutra Padai Shaiva, Hetu Mad Bhe Vinishchitai. Krishna says that this knowledge, he's talking about Kshetra Jnana, knowledge of the field and the knower of the field, referring to not exactly fields that are ploughed, but he's referring to the field of activities, which means this material world, and the knower of that field, which means the individual soul, the jiva, and the supreme soul, Paramatma Bhagavan. So he says that various rishis, and even in the Vedic literatures, in various places, this knowledge has been described in various ways. Now I will describe it according to the Vedanta Sutra, which is the ultimate exposition of spiritual knowledge prior to the Srimad Bhagavatam. They're non-different. But all knowledge is encapsulated in Vedanta Sutra. So anyway, Rishabhdev is saying that this sexual attraction, that is the cause of bondage in this material world, is the very principle of material existence. And as long as one is enamored by sexual attraction, then it is not possible to understand Krishna, as Prabhupada elaborates upon in this purport. Here it's described how one should meditate upon the form of the Lord. That is purifying. Meditation is not so easy. You can try it sometime. Just try and sit down and read this chapter about the Lord's beautiful form and his curling locks of blackish oiled hair, his smile, which in his enchanting smile, his eyebrows, description. So you can just sit and try and think about that. It's not very easy, because many thoughts come in the mind. And if one tries to concentrate on the form of the Lord, you'll find that the meditation is always disturbed again and again. So we can try to do that, but it's very difficult. In this age, chanting of Hare Krishna is recommended as a better process of meditation. Often, people ask us, well, do you meditate? So they say, yeah, we meditate. Active meditation. Meditation means to fix the mind on one point. That is attempted by the yogis, by the system of what is normally called meditation, dhyana yoga, the yoga of meditation. But dhyana, meditation, it doesn't necessarily, it's generally understood as the process of sitting down and attempting to shutting out all other thoughts and concentrating the mind on one point, as is described in Bhagavad Gita by Lord Krishna. But the intrinsic essence of the term meditation, whether we say it in English or Sanskrit or whatever, is that the fixity of thought. So sometimes you may say that, you know, for many years I was meditating upon, just like Prabhupada, he says that I was always thinking of how to go to the West. So that could be rephrased. Prabhupada was always meditating upon going to the West. So one may say, I'm meditating upon going to Vrindavan. That means that there's some plan, and always, maybe not, it definitely doesn't mean sitting down in a lotus posture and thinking about going to Vrindavan. But it means that it's always prominent in one's thoughts. How can I go? Prabhupada himself said that. I was always meditating upon going to Vrindavan. When I was young, I used to look at the train timetables and think I can get this train. There was a, there was and still is only one direct train from, it's the same train from Calcutta to Mathura, the Tufan Express. It's called Tufan, which means a hurricane, but it's one of the slowest trains in India, and that's saying something. So Prabhupada was meditating how to get the money, how to get the time. So he's always thinking how to go to Vrindavan. So meditation doesn't mean simply sitting, but it means to concentrate the mind on one idea. We find in the yoga, the Ashtanga yoga, the eightfold yoga system. What is that? Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Dharana, Dhyana, oh I missed one out, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. So these are the eight processes. So that, anyway, one of them, before Dhyana, meditation, comes Dharana, which means to have a concept upon which to meditate. And before that comes Pratyahara, which means shutting out the objects of the source of sensual disturbance. So in the Ashtanga Yoga system, first of all, there are do's and don'ts, things that should be done, things that shouldn't be done. Yama, Niyama. Yama, Niyama. Niyama. So that's also there in Bhakti Yoga. Then asana, one has to sit properly. Sit properly. Sit properly. Prabhupada, well known. Just at the time when they were taping Prabhupada's japa, and Prabhupada, he didn't care that they're taping it, but he saw us. Sit properly. So that's become immortal. You don't know who it was.
Vinod.
Who was it?
He was Eli's body actually last year. He was changing a car.
That's who Prabhupada told to sit properly?
Yeah.
That was taped in America though.
No? In Bombay.
Oh, that tape was done in Bombay.
Yeah.
Who's that?
Manasatita.
Oh, really?
He, like, bought it just recently.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was hit by a car.
Yeah. He was our friend. Like, every time I go to India, he's...
When you went to Rome?
Yeah. So we had close. We were...
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, ha, ha. How nice.
He was like this.
Yeah. So Prabhupada said, sit properly. So it's not so much emphasized in the Bhakti Yoga system how one has to sit properly. Actually, there are descriptions in Bhakti Shastras also how one should sit. In Hari Bhakti Vilas states that one should, when doing puja, one should sit in a Padmasana or some other posture. But it's not so much stressed as in the Hatha Yoga system. Because it's not the essence. In the essence is... Anyway, we'll come to that later. So, sitting, that also helps. If one sits with a straight back and can concentrate, that can also help one to chant better. It's not, however, that one has to become overly preoccupied with this and think that good sitting is the cause of good chanting. That is a misunderstanding. You were telling me that... And then there's some breathing, this Veda Academy or something. They're saying you have to breathe in, hold it, and then chant half a mantra, then breathe out, and then... But it becomes too difficult. You see, Hare Krishna, thinking more about the breathing than about Krishna. So sitting, that's also helpful if one can sit properly. And in fact, in Shastra, it's even stated that one should sit while chanting. Yeah. Not walking. However, Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to walk and chant. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to walk and chant. And A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who's gone to the camp, he also used to walk and chant. Not all the time, but at least sometimes. So, we can also walk and chant. Now you may say, well, the guru is supposed to follow Shastra. That's true. So, how can we understand this? That means guru knows the acharya knows the essence of Shastra and adheres to that. And he knows what are subsidiary rules that may or may not be necessary. The rule that one should sit to chant, it's not the essence. The essence is chanting with feeling and love for Krishna. And for persons who are not chanting at all, if they have to, it's not that you have to get them to, first of all, they have to do hatha yoga and they can sit in lotus pose and then they should start to chant. But somehow or other they should be induced to chant. And even if they can't sit properly, I mean, I can sit in the lotus pose for about a quarter of a second. And then it's too painful. I've just got stiff joints. And Bhavananda, if we have to tell him to sit in a lotus pose before he chants, then, you know, he's going to have to wait till the next life. So sitting can be helpful, but it's not the essence. The essence is the feeling with which we chant. So we'll come to that. Asana, pranayama, and all this complex breathing. Actually, in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, they have all this yoga. And it's also mentioned in the Haripatik lesson, yoga, one should do yoga. But anyway, forget it. It doesn't. It's not yoga, that means the brahmanas, their life, they'd be quite active, but a lot of it would be sitting and doing puja and this and that. And I guess for that reason, and also because for that reason, one of the acharyas in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, maybe Vedanta they should go. He introduced that the Sri Vaishnava brahmanas, they should do yoga daily, this kind of yoga, because that also helps to concentrate the mind and this and that. And it helps them to keep healthy, but it's not essential to bhakti yoga. And certainly, in our line, in Gaurya Vaishnav line, it's not part of our practice. Actually, Prabhupada, he more than once, when he saw people practicing yoga, just in the mornings, Prabhupada would go for a walk, he'd go with his disciples, and they'd be in the park. One Prabhupada Maharaj told me once he was walking in the park, just next to our temple in Lajpat Nagar at that time. So they were walking, it's a small park. Prabhupada was walking there in the morning, and one or two people were standing on their heads, and Garga Muni, Maharaj at that time, he started mocking a little bit. Prabhupada said, no, it's good for spiritual life. He taught not to laugh, it's good for spiritual life. It's yoga. Another time in America, devotees were on a morning walk and they saw in a park that someone standing on his head, and someone made a comment, a disparaging comment, one of the devotees with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, no, that's actually very good for spiritual life. So then the inevitable question came, well, should we also do that, Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, not necessary. So yoga may be done, but it's very difficult actually to achieve perfect that system, to achieve. I mean, first of all, it's asana, and asana doesn't mean just sitting, but there are so many apart from the sitting asanas, like Padmasana, which is lotus posture, and Sukhasana means sitting comfortably, cross-legged, but comfortably, not very simple. Cross-legged. No, this still the back should be straight, so just like that. And so there are so many sitting postures. And there are also halasana, and what else is there? Shavasana, dead body asana, halasana, plowasana, bhujangasana, and singhasana. Not this, not that singhasana. But anyway, there's like a snake, like a lion. Ashvasana, like a horse, and so many. So there are many asanas to be performed, and then one, when along with that, when it becomes adept in that, then the pranayama also, this controlling of the breath, which is actually very, very useful for stilling the mind, for health, so we're told. So then, after doing all that, when one becomes expert in all these different things, like there's also that there's one that kukuti asana. It's very, very, it looks like a chicken. You have your hands, your legs folded, and you put your hands through it and stand on your hands with your hands going through your crossed leg. You're in the Padmasana with your hands going through. There are other ones where you put your, I can't remember what that's called, but you put your legs up behind your neck and balance on your backside. Rather difficult. So after doing all that and becoming expert in that, then another concept, pratyahara, then you don't even get up to the stage of meditation. First of all, you have to do all these things. Then one has to withdraw the senses by breathing very gradually and carefully, and then withdraw the senses and then become unaware of things around one. And then dharana. Then one can begin to fix a... Dharana means a concept. One can begin to fix a concept in the mind, and the concept that is recommended, dhyana avastita tatgatena manaso pashyanti yang yoginaha. You know this line? Prabhupada quotes this quite often. Who knows what this means? Means that the form of the Lord, or the Lord Himself, is the goal of the yogis who meditate upon Him in meditation, dhyana. So then one fixes this concept, and then when one becomes fixed, when the all other thoughts are out from the mind, and thought is completely fixed on the form of the Lord, that is called meditation. And then from that comes samadhi. So it's not so easy. So people ask us, do we meditate? Yes, but different system. Active meditation. It means we're thinking of, we practice to think of Krishna by our activities, everything we do. And particularly by chanting the holy names of Krishna. We say japa meditation. Sometimes we advertise this when we're inviting people to come and join our, come for a weekend course in bhakti yoga. And there will be spiritual food, japa meditation, and like this. It's to attract people, because people think, well, meditation, that sounds very good, very spiritual. So actually japa is supposed to be meditation. That we meditate upon the Lord in His form as the holy name. But we often find similar difficulties to those which Hatha yogis find in trying to fix their minds upon the form of the Lord. The difficulty that other thoughts come into the mind while we're trying to chant. And sometimes devotees become discouraged. And sometimes they think that, well, it's better to chant one round better than 16 rounds not very well. We've heard this argument. Chant less with better quality. But the thing is that if you only chant one round, but that's also full of wavering mind. If we can chant one round without a wavering mind, then we can go on and chant 16 rounds. The point is that the quality of our chanting is not there. Therefore, Prabhupada said, when he was asked about this, Prabhupada said, first quantity, then quality. It doesn't come round the other way. By chanting, by practicing, the quality of chanting will gradually improve. We may ask, how gradually? It seems to take a long time. But we should have faith that by chanting, Krishna will help us, that eventually we will attain attachment for chanting the holy names. But we have to become free from offenses. Kabe hobe bole shridin amar aparad gucci, gucci shuddha name ruchi, kripa bole hobe hridaye toma, hridaye shancha. That Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying, when will my offenses cease? Then taste for the name will increase, and by mercy, by the mercy of the Lord and His devotees, the holy name will manifest within my heart. So even experienced practitioners of the holy name, it's understood that sometimes Krishna reveals Himself more to them in their chanting, and in other times less. This is called the name revealing Himself to us, because the name is different, non-different from Krishna. That is called Nama Smriti, or the manifestation of the name. So we hear that Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, sometimes chanting and chanting, sometimes feeling frustrated, would go and sit in the Ganga for a few days out of frustration. Why the name is not manifesting Himself to me? This Bhakti Bringa Govinda Maharaj, at that time Ayodhyapati Prabhu, used to live in Vrindavan, used to be the head cook in ISKCON Vrindavan. So he was very close, or he was associated a lot with Prabhupada's godbrother Akinchan Krishna Das Babaji Maharaj, who was also very close to Prabhupada, a good friend of Srila Prabhupada. They used to, when Prabhupada was lying on his bed, that last Leela, for several months, sometimes Akinchan Krishna Das Babaji Maharaj would come. Prabhupada was very grave and serious during all that time. But when Babaji Maharaj, he would mostly only chant Hare Krishna. And even if anyone asked him any question, he would just say Hare Krishna and laugh. But he was always very jolly. So he came with Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very grave during that time, very serious. But when Babaji Maharaj came, then he was talking with Prabhupada in Bengali, and they were laughing. In Bengali, they were laughing and joking like this. So anyway, especially after Prabhupada's disappearance, Ayodhyapati Prabhu was associating with him. So he would sometimes come and stay, and they'd give him a room in Krishna Balaram Mandir in the Gurukul there, next to Ayodhyapati Prabhu's room. So Ayodhyapati Prabhu, means now Govinda Maharaj, told me that he would hear him chanting through the night, because he didn't sleep, practically. I mean, he might have done, but no one ever caught him at it, because he'd chant throughout the night, and the day, actually. Most of the day, he'd just chant. So he was chanting japa. So Ayodhyapati Prabhu told me he was chanting and chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Then in the middle of the night, he just suddenly heard him chanting loudly, and he was just like complete ecstasy. So the name was manifesting Himself. Krishna was manifesting Himself. It means when chanting, and then these bhajananandis, they'll chant, the name will manifest. But that's not, it's just like, it's not, here Prabhupada is discussing that that this one has to overcome the stage of having anarthas. Otherwise, one cannot understand Krishna. Either by the dhyana yoga method, Krishna is not possible to even begin to meditate if the heart is full of anarthas. Something very important. They're chasing after someone, maybe. So, and in bhakti yoga also, Krishna will manifest Himself to us as much as we become free from anarthas, unwanted things, namely lust, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya. These are the six main Shararipu, the six enemies of the conditioned soul. Lust, greed, anger. Mostly these three are emphasized. Krishna himself emphasizes these three in Bhagavad Gita. Lust, greed and anger. The three gates leading to hell. Kam, krodh, lova, moha, illusion. Mada, the just madness of identifying with his body. And matsarya, envy. So these are the six enemies. And as much as one is afflicted by these enemies, or as much as we remain attached to these enemies, then we cannot understand Krishna. Kam, krob, lob, moha, mada, adi, abhishta. E shabna chere. Kishe pabe radha Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur poses the rhetorical question that as long as we are absorbed in lust, greed, anger, etc., then how is it possible for us to attain to Radha and Krishna, who are spotlessly pure? It is not possible. It is impossible. So, what is the process recommended in this age? To chant the holy names of Krishna. This is the process. Even though the mind may waver while we're chanting, this chanting is very purifying as long as we're not offensive. Offensive chanting, that will also have a purifying effect, but also after a very long time. And actually, if one makes offenses while chanting, then one can actually go apparently backwards. Prabhupada explained this. That he was asked, years ago I saw this, we used to have printouts of Prabhupada's letters. I think this letter got lost because I don't remember seeing it in the folio. But got it? Yeah. So Prabhupada, a disciple had asked Prabhupada, what about Sai Baba followers who chant Hare Krishna? Will they get the effect of purification from that? Because Sai Baba followers, we heard the other day in Zagreb, their program was going on next 2 hours. They were also chanting Hare Krishna. They even got the tune from us because that's not a traditional tune. It's an ISKCON tune. I think it's adopted. Yeah. It's adopted from some Western pop music or something. So, Prabhupada replied that they will get beneficial effect after a long time. That means that they will, first of all, they will have to suffer for their offense. Their offense of equating Sai Baba with Krishna. Very serious offense. They will have to, Prabhupada said, they will have to suffer seriously for that offense. And when the effect of that offense is cleared away, then they can get some effect of purification from chanting. So that kind of offense, if we're chanting offensively, even then even in offensive chanting, there's some kind of purification, but it won't be manifest very quickly. And it won't be very prominent either. One does not become very much purified at any stage by chanting with such serious offenses. The question was about Mayavadis and followers of Sai Baba. So if one is chanting without offense, but that means without an offensive attitude, then one can become purified. That's called the clearing stage. Namabhas. There are two different categories of Namabhas. One is this, Stoba, Hela, Sanket, and Parihas. The four kinds of Namabhas, where one chants, but not exactly for the sake of glorifying Krishna, but also without real knowledge of Krishna. As if one chants neglectfully, that means not insultingly, but also without full attention for some kind of entertainment, just like there was this musical that was going on in London for many years. Hair, it was called Hair. and it was enacted all naked. That's why it ran on for many years, probably. So anyway, apparently at the end, all the actors and actresses got together and sung Hare Krishna. So, at least for people watching it was not offensive. They may get some benefit from that, from hearing Hare Krishna. As a kind of joke, it may be done even as a kind of joke, there's benefit. I remember myself, here's a glimpse into my ridiculous past. That once I was at a football game, watching a professional football game. Yes, Prabhupada saved me. So it was a boring game and there were no goals. So someone with a completely shaved head, which was unusual in those days, ran on the field, got the ball, and ran and kicked it into the goal. It went like, and everyone, and then all the yobos, as we call them, that's an acronym for young boys, means they're like the football hooligans. They all start, because this song was famous, the Hare Krishna song, so they all started singing. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, that same. Because they thought it was a joke, him having a shaved head. And so they thought it's Hare Krishna. They're the only people in those days having a shaved head was Hare Krishna. So I remember thinking, well, that sounds very nice. So they got some, they were singing it as a joke. And they got some benefit, and I guess I also got some. I got some benefit too. I thought it sounded very nice. I don't think I ever heard that song when it was like in the top 10. Maybe I must have heard it here and there, but I wasn't much fond of the top 10 songs. So, or to indicate something else, it's another kind of nama bas. When the name is chanted to sing, just like someone may say, where are you going to? You may be in Calcutta, you see, someone says, where are you going to? Krishnanagar, a city in West Bengal. I'm going to Krishnanagar. No thought of Krishna. And even the city is not named after Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's named after a Raja, a king from that area, whose name was Krishna. He was named after Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that has come. Or like that, the Deputy Prime Minister of India, his name is Lal Krishna Advani. His name is there. Mostly they write it as LK, because they want to avoid saying Krishna, because they're rascals. But somehow if someone says the name, you get the benefit. Maybe they're not thinking of Krishna, the Supreme Lord. It's just his name, therefore they say. Therefore, in Indian culture, it's always considered auspicious to give the name Madhav, Govinda, Gopala, like this. I remember once in Bangladesh, I was in a village and there was one young woman with the usual, you know, like 8 or 9 sons, and the youngest was Vishnu. It's not a joke to have 8 or 9 sons, it's just normal. Nowadays people use contraceptives. So mostly people had 8, 9, 10 sons and a few daughters also. So I mean, there is also the process of self-restraint, but that's not normal for most people. So it was normal for most people to have lots of children. So her youngest son was called Vishnu, and then whenever she was busy doing her work, and then she would notice he's not there. So she would call out, Vishnu, 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 and all day long, every 15 minutes, yeah. It would be, Vishnu, Vishnu. It's very nice. She was thinking of her son. She wasn't thinking of Vishnu, but she got the benefit. There's even another Lord. The Lord is so merciful that even if we chant his holy name, Oh, there's another kind of, apart from saying Lal Krishna Advani, something like Sinarama, Laundarama. Sometimes they used to have the place where people go to wash their clothes, they call it a Laundarama. Or where the cinema house, they call it a Sinarama. So they're not thinking of Rama, but they get the benefit. Now, even if once that example is given in one of the Puranas, quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the Muslim says a Yavana. He was killed at the time of death. So, that's a stupid thing to say. He was killed by a pig in the forest. Maybe he went to pastoral in the forest. And some wild pig came and gored him. So at the time of death, he called out, Haram! 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 Because among Muslims, pigs are considered very inauspicious. There's some good things about Islam. Actually, there are many, many good things. It's not as bad as it's made out in the press. It's pretty bad, but there are some good things also. There are some bad things also. The tendency to be fanatical, it's not very good. But anyway, haram, he was calling out because a pig is considered very inauspicious. So, haram, haram. And as he died, he said, haram, which means, O Ram. The devotee says, haram, O Ram, haram. Mahatma Gandhi was also said, he Ram, at the time of death. Although the guy who shot him, Godse, what's his name? Natwala or Godse. Before he was executed, he told his brother in the prison, because it was all over the press that he chanted, hey Ram. He said he never said, hey Ram, that's all bogus. Just an invention. He never said. So anyway, maybe he's... Anyway, getting diverted here. So even the Muslim who says haram, if he says haram, haram in... It means how bad. So he's saying haram to mean something very bad. But actually it's very auspicious for him because he gets the effect of namabhas, chanting at the name in the time of death. And there's another way even. Even if someone says... I'm trying to think. On Randair Road, there are many Malati flowers. Randair Road is a road in Surat, for your information. On Randair Road, there are many Malati flowers. There aren't, but I'm just saying. So, here, on Ra, Randair Road, there are many Malati flowers. So Ra and Ma, the two syllables of Rama are there in that sentence. They're separated by other syllables. But saying that, one gets the effect of chanting Rama. That is the mercy of the holy name. So merciful. Absolutely no thought of Rama. But because one has said the syllables, even disconnected, benefit is there. Namabhas. So this is one kind of namabhas. And the other kind of namabhas is that clearing stage between namaparad and shuddhanam. Chanting the holy name with offenses and chanting the holy name in purity. We say shuddhanam. The name is always pure. Shuddhanam means pure name. The name is always pure, but we don't always chant purely. But there is a namabhas stage where one is trying to be purified. There is an attempt to be purified. So even if we're chanting, we're saying the name of Krishna, and our mind is going on a magical mystery tour all over the universe, still the attempt to chant pure, if there's an attempt to chant purely, we get the benefit of becoming purified. But the attempt should be there. As much as the attempt is there, that much we become purified. And the attempt is that when we find that my mind, I'm sitting here in Rijeka, but my mind is in Hong Kong, then we bring it back. Immediately. Bring back, okay, now we have to think. that name again. We have to think, concentrate on the sounds of the holy name. Prabhupada recommended chanting loudly. He actually liked, he didn't like devotees chanting loudly next to his room when he was trying to write. But he recommended, and he liked that devotees would chant loudly, Bhava Ananda. As Prabhupada used to say, Bhava Ananda. So he would chant so loudly. You know that long building in Mayapur? And then there's the room, Prabhupada's room is just opposite them. And Bhava Ananda's room was in that long building, just opposite Prabhupada's. And he'd walk up and down with his wooden peg shoes, clunk, 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 on that floor, chanting, Hare! I mean, so loud, if I say I'll lose my voice. And you could, it could be heard clearly from where Prabhupada, that was his japa, could be heard clearly. Prabhupada liked that. Oh, chanting very loud. He liked that. Very loud and clear. So, that is recommended, because it's more difficult if we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Traditionally, japa is chanted like that. It's called upangshu. It means when one chants just with practically a whisper. So that's actually how it's described in Shastra, how there's manasik, chanting within the mind, upangshu, which is just chanting, just it means moving the lips. Just moving the lips. Just very quietly. And then chanting loudly, that which actually means kirtan. Generally it's considered like that. But Prabhupada, he suggested that we chant at least loudly enough so that we can be heard by someone sitting next to us. At least that much loud. So loud chanting, that helps to keep the mind fixed on the name. But so this chanting like that, even if the tendency for the mind to wander, but we should keep on trying to bring it back. That the mind is fixed on at least the sound of the holy name. With the faith that if we go on doing that, that gradually the name will manifest to us. There are various stages, just like sometimes we feel, oh, today my japa went nicely. I feel I got more inspiration today. Sometimes we feel, well, I chanted, but didn't really,
Dry.
Little dry, yeah. I didn't really, wasn't really there. So you may think, well, okay, I'll try again better the next day. Or you may think, well, if I get a little time, I'll try and chant a little more later in the day. We have to keep, it's like that. Sometimes we're chanting, it seems like a bit of a struggle. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. And then other days it just seems to flow naturally. We go on chanting with the faith that the dry periods will become less and the juicy periods will become more. Now, Prabhupada, talking about this active meditation, Prabhupada also gave devotees service to do. We should do service, active service. And we may say, well, I'll just sit and chant. Prabhupada didn't recommend that. I was in India, in Vrindavan, in 1976. And I remember devotees telling me that Prabhupada had said this. That Prabhupada said, don't think you can sit in Vrindavan, in Radhakund, and just simply sit and chant like a Babaji. He said, if you try to do that, just to simply sit and chant, you will simply think of women. You'll simply eat and sleep and think of women and money and fall down. That was Prabhupada's prediction, if you try to do that. So he wanted that devotees chant, but he was very insistent. You must chant minimum 16 rounds. But he also wanted devotees to be actively engaged in service and service to the preaching mission. And he called this Sankirtan. Prabhupada said distributing books, that's also kirtan. He said that is the chanting in the streets, that's the yuga dharma, to go out among the people and chant the holy names. Prabhupada said that this Brihat Mridanga, that is the greater kirtan. He said not that the chanting in the street should be given up, but this book distribution, that is the greater kirtan. So that's why we call going out on book distribution Sankirtan. You may say, well, how is it Sankirtan? Because Sankirtan means drums, cartels and singing. But it's Sankirtan because it's a joint effort to distribute Krishna's glories. Kirtan means to glorify Krishna. That's one. Chanting the holy names means glorifying Krishna. And kirtan, we find in the 9 processes of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. So the devotee, they are given 9 devotees, examples, who became perfect by various processes. So Shravan, hearing, is Parikshit. And Kirtan is Shukadeva Goswami, Vyasaki. So his Kirtan, he wasn't going out with Mridanga and cartels, but he was speaking the glories of the Lord through Srimad Bhagavatam. So generally, kirtan is understood to mean singing. And sankirtan means going with Bahubir Miliva Yad Kirtanam Iti Sankirtanam. When many people come together and chant the holy names together, that is called sankirtan. Sangha, together. Sangha, sang, sankirtan. Sam also means samyak, which means complete. So complete kirtan is with many. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur expanded the meaning of sankirtan to mean preaching. And practically his kirtan was, we don't hear so much about him being in ecstatic kirtans. He also organized many kirtans. But his kirtan was mostly by lecturing. And those lectures were made into books and actually magazines. His lectures were put into magazine articles and distributed. And he very much wanted them distributed. And he told Abhay Charanaravinda Das, his one disciple, that if you ever get money, print books. And from this, and Abhay Charanaravinda Das, who later on, as you know, became our Srila Prabhupada, he noted that our Guru Maharaj would become very happy if he saw a disciple would just go to Navadvip and sell a few copies of Nadia Prakash for a few paisa, he'd become very happy. And then he told me that if you ever get money, print books. So he understood, Prabhupada said, I understood that my Guru Maharaj is very fond of books. So there's one verse in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam which Prabhupada dictated from when he was just towards the end of his pastimes. What's this? Kriyasu, something Kriyasu, I can't remember exactly. It means different kinds of activities. So Prabhupada noted that there are many austerities, for instance, in distributing books. But Prabhupada said that these are purifying. Prabhupada noted that in our Krishna conscious movement, all activities are centered around book distribution. It's the Sankirtan movement. All activities are centered around book distribution. That means deity worship. You may think, you know, it seems like something different. And even we say Pancharatrik Vidhi, deity worship, and Bhagavat Vidhi means preaching. So it seems to be different. But the Pancharatrik Vidhi is only to serve the Bhagavata Vidhi. That helps Bhagavata Vidhi for a pure devotee of Mahabhagavat. He doesn't need to worship deities. He may do, and often will do, but he sees Krishna everywhere, and he doesn't need the deity form of the Lord to serve the Lord. So all activities in our Krishna consciousness are centered on book distribution. There are many activities. So these activities, they are also meant for meditation and purification. Here in this verse and purport, Prabhupada is describing about the purification necessary for meditation on Krishna. And practically speaking, Prabhupada gave us the formula by which we can meditate upon Krishna and become purified and become more and more purified in our meditation on Krishna. In other words, in our Krishna consciousness. In other words, by taking part in this Krishna consciousness movement, if we simply take part in it, if the leaders of this movement steer it on the course that it's meant to be on, then anyone simply by taking part in this movement, whatever they're doing, they become purified and purified from material desires, and conjointly, they become as the purification takes place and the meditation on Krishna begins. The two things take place side by side. That by taking part in the activities of the Sankirtan movement, automatically one is purified and automatically one starts to think about Krishna. And that helps the chanting. And the chanting helps everything else. Prabhupada noted that it can be seen that one is getting the actual effect of chanting if one is enthusiastic in service. So nowadays we get all these so-called Babaji's even in Croatia, which is ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. A Babaji in Croatia? You want to be a Babaji, you have to go to Radha Kundos. And those Babaji's, they're also ridiculous. But the idea of being a Babaji in Croatia in your shorts, and it's just bizarre. It's nonsense. Anyway, we have to do so much chanting, but that chanting, what is the meaning of their chanting? If they're actually chanting, then they should be enthusiastic to serve Krishna by distributing Prabhupada's books. Sometimes we think, well, there are so many alternatives to what Prabhupada gave us, and you can say in one sense that's true, but this may sound very sectarian, but actually there's nothing like ISKCON. Even it may be in a mess in so many ways, but the fact is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chose Prabhupada to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. He didn't choose anyone else. There's so many other god brothers, and he gave Prabhupada the way to do that, and Prabhupada, he put all his ecstasies, which means his direct communion with Krishna, and who can be more dear to Krishna, as Krishna himself says, than one who preaches Krishna consciousness all over the world. So Prabhupada, undoubtedly the most advanced devotee of his generation. He got as Prabhupada said, my god brothers, they got the mercy of my Guru Maharaj, that they got the buildings that he had built. And he himself said, I have not come to this world as a mason for building buildings, but as a peon of Rupa and Raghunath. So Prabhupada said, they got the mercy in the form of the buildings, but I got the mercy of my Guru Maharaj in the form of the benediction to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, to fulfill his real desire. So, there may be so many other Gauriya Vaishnava institutions, but we've got Prabhupada and we've got Prabhupada's books and the opportunity to distribute them, and other organizations may be there and they don't have the Shakti, and they never will have the Shakti that ISKCON, even in its, you know, like I say, you know, like the Sri and Madhva Sampradayas, they took hundreds of years to become worn down to the present state they're in which many of the traditional followers are following. Instead, they're following Sai Baba. But we in ISKCON, we did it in one generation. We're Americans. We do things quick. So, but still, nevertheless, if Krishna consciousness is spread all over the world, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said it would be done, it's not going to be done through any Gauriya Math or any Babaji. It's going to be done through ISKCON only. Because the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is here and with Prabhupada. One time, some disciples said to Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, the residents of Vrindavan are proud of you. Prabhupada said they should be. They didn't do anything. So this kind of Babaji attitude that you measure how advanced you are and how short and dirty your little cloth is, how many biddies you can smoke in between chanting your 64 rounds. Actually, one of my godbrothers, he went and became a Babaji at Radhakund, and then later he came back to ISKCON. He joined us for some time in Bangladesh. And he told me that at that time there were only two Babajis in the whole of Radhakund who didn't smoke biddies. And those two were previously from the Gauriya Math. So they measure advancement in how much you can, you know, like this, how much you're having, how much you can talk about prema and bhava. Prabhupada is very practical. What are you doing for Krishna? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted Krishna consciousness spread all over the world. So it's not our duty to imitate Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but as our duty to serve his mission. So you may say, well, even the great acharyas, they used to do this meditation on the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So why don't we do it? Yeah, we do it. But just like Prabhupada told Burijan Prabhu, that you after the age of 50, after you've preached, you retire and go to Vrindavan. So Prabhupada wasn't against that. He told Yamuna that when you're old, you go and live in Vrindavan. Was it Yamuna or someone else? I can't remember. But he said, you have to preach. Otherwise, you know, he told Yamuna that... No, I'm mixing up two things. She was an expert cook. Probably still is. I'm sure she still is. So Prabhupada told her, if you don't teach what you have learned, then you'll simply become envious of others. And he told, I believe it was Burijan Prabhu, he told him that when you're 50, then you go and live in Vrindavan. But he's... I'm getting mixed up. But anyway, the gist of it is, exactly who he told, I can't remember. But he said that if you don't preach before you go to Vrindavan, then you won't be able to control your senses when you go there. You won't get the benefit of going there. Prabhupada himself said, I want to die on the battlefield, like Arjuna, fight up to my last breath for Krishna. So he did both. He went on preaching, dictating his books, while in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada wasn't against that, meditating on the pastimes of Krishna, but he said, first you have to be qualified. And that purification will come by preaching. This is what Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said. Dushtaman tumi kishe vaishnava, patishta tare nirjana ghare, tava harinam kevala kaita, tava pratishta shukare bishta. He said that, my dear rascal mind, what kind of a Vaishnava are you? You simply want to imitate the activity of sitting like a Babaji and chanting. But your so-called chanting is only cheating because you simply want to get the name and fame of being a great Vaishnava. He said that your desire for name and fame is as glorious as the stool of a pig. So then he goes on, the whole poem elaborates how one has to preach Krishna consciousness. And it's not that the process of remembering Krishna is rejected, but kirtan prabhave smarana hoibe shekale nirjana shambha. That by when one is purified by kirtan, by preaching Krishna consciousness, the Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he expanded the meaning of kirtan to vigorous preaching all over the world. So when by that preaching, then remembrance of Krishna will come. Then it is possible. At that time it is possible you sit alone and remember Krishna without thinking of women and money and without thinking of how I can be glorified. So this is our process of meditation, engaging in the activities of the Sankirtan movement. Now Prabhupada also said that he wanted our devotees to go and live on farms. The Grihastha. So you may think, well, where's the preaching? Well, that's also one kind of preaching, showing people how to live an ideal life. And having children is also preaching. You have to preach to children. It's not that preaching is you have to go and find someone on the street and give them a book. Preaching also, charity begins at home. You have to preach the devotees and children, you have to preach them also. And also Prabhupada said, he said that not only grihasthas can live on farms, sannyasis can live on farms also. He was saying in Hyderabad. And they can go around all the villages by bullock cart and preach. So farm is also meant to be a base for preaching. And we can invite people to come, like in Hungary they have their farm. And it's a very nice place, even from the material point of view. So they invite, and so many people come. Karmis. So this is the meditation process for the modern age. Meditate on how to preach Krishna consciousness. And that preaching, that will purify us. Not just meditate, but you have to do it also. Hare Krishna. Any question, comment about this? Yeah, short, but short or long is... What is the purpose of life? Short question. It's abominable. Something horrible. I said that, didn't I? Haram. It's a common word in Urdu, Hindi.
It's like bad.
Yeah, it means something bad.
So it's not blaspheming.
It's not blaspheming. There's no thought of Ram in there at all. It's probably an Arabic word or a Persian word or something. So many words come from Arabic into Hindi. In English also, many words come.
I just want to mention about Kirtana, Babaji. I heard in connection with that, and he had a little Shiva who's worshipping also. He has such a faith in holy name that when devotees brought some milk because he used to hold while he did some sleep or some milk or something like that. And out of habit, when they entered his room, they chanted Hare Krishna. So he got immediately up, so he said, don't chant. Because holy name is so powerful that the milk is already offered. You know, and then he can offer it to the Shiva.
You all heard that? We can offer by chanting. Actually, the chanting, that is the offering is there. In one of those small books, I can't remember which one, maybe it's Elevation to Krishna Consciousness, I think it is. Prabhupada he's giving the book. In the book, it's like convincing you should be Krishna conscious. Then one chapter is how to be Krishna conscious at home. He gives a very simple process. You make an altar with pictures of Krishna. And you put your food and you offer it by saying Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. This is the book. I believe it's Elevation to Krishna Consciousness. How you become elevated to Krishna. How to take to Krishna Consciousness. That's a very nice book. We should distribute that very widely. Often devotees think, well, the small books, they're good for beginners and they're very simple. But actually, some of the small books are pretty difficult. That Raja Vidya and Beyond Birth and Death begins with a whole technical discussion of difference between Buddhists and impersonalists. I personally think that Science of Self-Realization is a great introductory book, which people can pick it up and immediately start to read it and understand it. And actually many people became devotees by reading that book. Yourself also? But Prabhupada actually wanted Bhagavad Gita, he wanted that distributed. And especially the first two cantos, here it's mentioned, especially the first two cantos of Bhagavatam. But other books also. Devotees asked about Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada said, yes, you can distribute them. Nectar of Instruction. They were saying, well, Prabhupada, we'll just print a few copies of the devotees. No, Prabhupada said, print many copies and distribute. And actually, even in England, I heard, Janananda Prabhu was telling me. He said in England that they did a survey. They got some professional company to do a survey of the public, what they thought about our books. And they found that the book that the public appreciated most was The Nectar of Instruction. because they appreciated like the moral principles that are being taught. I mean, some people, there are still some people out there who appreciated it, and they thought it was something practical. So, anything else? It's one of those how can questions. How can we discriminate among those we associate with and not commit Vaishnava Aparad? And not be what? Not becoming puffed up. We can discriminate, that means we can offer respects to all devotees, but if we feel the association of a certain devotee is not conducive for our advancement, then we may not associate very closely. Just, Hari Bol, how are you? Hare Krishna. Although in festivals, everyone comes together. Festivals are very good for bringing everyone together and everyone gets absorbed in service. And not to become puffed up, that's a problem, because if one is trying to practice seriously, then we have to discriminate, because there's no use if we want to be serious just thinking, well, everyone's the same and everything's the same, and therefore, well, I'll go into this devotee's house and they offer me something to eat and I'll eat it. I don't know, you know, how they cooked it and whether they're chanting 16 rounds, whether they're following the four regulated principles. Just to be nice, we shouldn't compromise our principles. But then if you don't take that, say, oh, you're puffed up. And we may be puffed up also. Because if we are acting on a higher platform, it's actually a higher platform to be strict than not to be strict. And then the tendency is to think, I'm better. Well, we can always remember that actually I heard that there was one devotee who was following very strictly, and he used to say that people used to say, oh, you're very strict, and he said, yeah, I'm so fallen that I have to follow far more strictly than you just to come up to any ordinary level. So he can say like that. Self-deprecation is also useful if it's done with some sincerity. You know what that means, self-deprecation? It means to say, I'm a fool, I'm a rascal, and all this kind of thing. I'm unworthy. Of course, sometimes the sahajiyas, they like to do that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he calls sahajiyas hellish incarnations of false humility. I'm so fallen. I've seen it all in Bangladesh. It was a good training for me, actually, because I'm seeing everything that I saw there, here also. Jayatirtha, he was the GBC and guru in London. Then I heard something about him wailing and crying and falling off the Vyasasan. And I wrote to one of my godbrothers in England, and I said, what's going on? And he wrote back and said, well, you know, it's really ecstatic, we never had such ecstatic kirtans. And he described all the thing in detail. This is all around me, I know all about this, this is just sahajiya, that's all. All the people crying in ecstasy and making a big show and falling on the ground. I never experienced such ecstatic kirtans, he said. I've seen really ecstatic kirtans in Bangladesh. People jumping up and down.